Blog Talk Radio. Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you so much for waking up early this morning. I had a wonderful week, and I hope you did too. Most people are sleeping late, but the listeners out there, I want to thank you for your support. This morning, we're going to be talking about a revolution, specifically a soundtrack for a revolution, directed by Bill Guttentag and Dan Sturman, executive producer Danny Glover, and so many known singers on this. And one of the known singers is Anthony Hamilton. We'll be calling in today, John Legend's on, Joss Stone, Wyclef Jean, and The Roots. So many people helped create this wonderful movie. Let me read you just this message from Mississippi that helped open the soundtrack for a revolution. Today, 45% of the population of Mississippi is colored. This situation has brought problems. It has created challenges, but most important of all, it has inspired a social system to meet the challenge. And what do you think that social system is? The system of segregation. I want to introduce my wonderful guest, Bill Guttentag. He is a two-time Oscar-winning documentary film writer, producer, director. You might have heard of some of his films, Non King, Twin Towers. He's worked on the NBC series, Crime and Punishment. And he also has a new book out called Boulevard. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thank you for calling in this morning. He's calling in all the way from California, early for him, very early. I'm not sure if you had your coffee yet.
I've had it, have it right here.
Good, good, good. This is a wonderful, beautiful film, as many of your other films are. I mean, and you take the covers off, not gently. You just kind of rip them off in a lot of the scenes in here, some of the dead activists. You talk about the four little girls are bombed in the church. So many things that people maybe don't want to think about, maybe forgotten about. And I think that's why you made the film, is because you feel that people may have forgotten about it and the young people today don't know about it.
You know, that is exactly right, Joy. It's really amazing that we've been showing the film from, you know, high schools and junior high schools and all sorts of economic situations and colleges, from community colleges to well-known four-year colleges. And what we're finding is that there's a generation out there that doesn't really know the story. And it's really tragic in a way, because it's such a powerful story. And I think in the same way that, you know, Jewish people tell the story of Passover every year, you know, I think this is a story that we all should hear every year, because it is so important. And it's not that they're badly taught or anything. I think it's just the march of time. But the story is amazing, it's inspiring, and it changed a nation and a world. And I think we should teach it over and over again.
Well, I think it's definitely neat. I mean, look at what's going on in Arizona right now, and they're trying to stop ethnic studies in the classroom. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think, you know, I think what's going on in Arizona, my personal opinion, is terrible. But I think there's also an equally bad example where you had the person who was just nominated for senator from Kentucky to go in the primary, and he was quoted as Rand Paul as saying that segregation is not such a bad thing. And, you know, I would ask anyone who believes segregation is not such a bad thing to see our film, or, you know, any one of a number of films, or just go to the library and look at, you know, look at what happened. I mean, it's a terrible situation. I think that, you know, we're trying to get people to remember what happened. And sometimes, you know, I think it seems far away, and then you realize it's not that far away. And
so No, it's not that far away. It's only maybe a generation away. And I think people want to say, well, everything's fine now. Everything's good. Can we just move on? Like, can we just get past this? And like you said, I think history is important. But I also think that let's focus on the music, that music is such a powerful instrument. And many cultures have had music. I mean, we've had Cuban and Puerto Rican protest music with Nueva Trova, the Irish rebel songs. You got punk music. I mean, you have the Native Americans with the ghost dance. all cultures have some kind of music that, so to speak, help them fight the power or give them the strength to move on past some kind of struggle. And in your movie, one of the songs, Wade in the Water, that was sung by Angie Stone. Angie Stone happened to have been on the show last year. And that's a beautiful song. How did you decide what songs to put in the movie?
Well, I think that there were some songs that you felt like you really had to be in the film. And others, you know, we work with a great music supervisor, Corey Smith, who did Dave Chappelle's Block Party. And Corey would suggest musicians, and we'd get together with the musicians and say, what seems like a good fit? And, you know, for example, we did John Legend singing Woke Up This Morning With My Mind on Freedom. And when John came to record the song, you know, I was sort of setting up the cameras and working with him. He was sort of playing on the piano. And like an hour later, John said, okay, you know, I'm ready to go. And I said, wow, that was really fast. He said, well, we should sing this in church. Woke up this morning with my mind on Jesus. So, I think, you know, you're starting from a familiar place. And that, of course, is the history of the music of civil rights movement, that, it, you know, it's been, you know, part of African-American culture in different forms for a very long time. And in a way, I think, look, the musicians in our film, I think, did an amazing job on the songs. But the music kind of belongs to sort of everybody. I mean, they made it their songs. When John Legend sings, you know, Woke Up This Morning, Mind on Freedom, it's really his song. But I also believe that, you know, there'll be another time when someone else will make it their song. The music is so powerful, and it works on, you know, several levels. But
yeah, it's kind of timeless in a sense. It's timeless. It depends on the situation and the circumstances that the music could be used to push something forward or hold something back, so to speak. Let me just tell the listeners, if you're listening, the call-in number is 646-929-0368, and if you have a question or a comment, you can press the number 1 on your phone keypad. Another one of the great singers you had on there was Wyclef, and definitely Wyclef is an activist working with the Haitian people where he's from, terrible situation going on there. How was it working with him on the song?
Wyclef was just fantastic. I mean, he sang, you know, here's the state of Mississippi, and Mississippi was really considered, you know, the worst of the worst during the civil rights movement. I mean, there were plenty of bad places, but Mississippi was the heart of, you know, what needed to be changed. And I think he did, again, he did an extraordinary job, really put his heart into it. I mean, I should mention, too, that all the musicians in this film, you know, did this, you know, for just a small honorarium. It was due to their commitment, and a large chunk of the money on the film is going to charity. I mean, this was a film where we're, you know, looking to get it out there, and people should know that there's a lot of good that'll come out of the film. I hope not just from seeing it, but for a charity component as well.
Let me tell them the website. If you're interested in learning more about Soundtrack for a Revolution, it's soundtrackforarevolutionfilm.com. Again, soundtrackforarevolutionfilm.com. And if you want to learn more about Bill Guttentag, he has his own website, billguttentag.com. Now, you have a new book that's out, Boulevard, that, as I was telling you earlier, let me tell you, people, if you pick up this book, just be prepared, okay? You know, just prepare yourself that this is not some happy, you know, beautiful flowers trump through the garden type of story. It is a searing story. Let me read, actually, a part of his book here. Lining both sides of Santa Monica Boulevard were boys, all kinds of boys, white boys, black boys, Asian and Latino boys, tall, muscular boys in jeans and cowboy boots, others who wore tiny shorts and were almost delicate looking. Some were punked out in studded leather jackets, but a lot more looked like they stashed their surfboards before hitting the streets. Some looked like they were in their late teens or early 20s, but most were younger and some much younger. Half were shirtless, not caring about the cold, and all were eyeing the streets as cars slowed to a crawl as the drivers looked over the boys like they were in a drive-thru sex supermarket. Wow. What? Go ahead. What got to say for yourself, young?
Well, the book is set, you know, in the streets of Hollywood. And look, there's kids that run away all over the country. I mean, I was mentioned to before we came here, there's 1 in 7 children between the ages of 10 and 18 will run away every year. And this is sort of amazing, too. The number of kids living on their own has increased 40% over the last year, more than double the number in 2003. And so it's really, you know, sort of shocking what's going on in the streets. And I think a lot of us are able to leave our lives without being aware of it. But, you know, the kids are, you know, they're still kids. and they have all the things that, you know, kids need, and they're living a sort of really, you know, tough life in Hollywood. But, you know, again, I like to say it's not, you know, I'd like to think it's a good story and it's all based on truth, but, you know, the story is still a novel, and, you know, and I try to, you know, paint a sympathetic and true view of what goes on the streets of Hollywood. And the thing that's interesting is kids run away all over the country, but they're usually running from something. No,
yeah, I would say they're running from something. I mean, because why would a kid run from, you know, they have a shelter, they have food, they have clothing, they're getting education, they're getting love. I think I'm a parent. I have a 16-year-old, and reading that, like I was telling you, it's hard for me also because I'm a parent. And I think, oh, my God, what if my daughter ran away? What would happen to her? And as a matter of fact, last night I told her, I said, look, if you ever decide to run away, please go to a family member's house or Aunt So-and-so's house or something. Don't go to some boy's house, you know, because, you know, it's scary out there. You know, it's not an easy place. And I ran away once when I was a kid, but I ran around the corner to my godmother's house, you know.
It's really good advice, and, you know, I was going to mention, too, it's the thing that's a little bit unique about Hollywood is people run to Hollywood, you know, as far as running away, so they come to Hollywood thinking that they're going to be models or movie stars or rap or rock stars, and, you know, the chances, of course, are infinitesimally small, but mm-hmm. because they're showing up on the streets, there's a whole system of people who are set up to exploit those kids, and there's also people out there trying to help the kids, too, and so I think it's a combination of bad and good, and hopefully the good will outweigh the bad in the end.
Oh, definitely. I wanted to read some of the lyrics you were talking about the song, Here's to the State of Mississippi. Oh, yeah. Just going back to the soundtrack for a revolution, it says, here's to the people of Mississippi who say the folks up north, they just don't understand, and they tremble in their shadows at the thunder of the Klan. The sweating of their souls can't wash the blood from off their hands. They smile and shrug their shoulders at the murder of a man. Oh, here's to the land you've torn out the heart of, Mississippi, find yourself another country to be part of. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's some tough lyrics.
Yeah. Where were you when Martin Luther King was shot?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. It's, I mean, not as interesting as a lot of other people, but no, I was a kid, and I grew up in Philadelphia, so I was sort of aware of it, which was sort of interesting going back and dealing with and seeing what... you know, the past times and trying to, mm-hmm. to learn about it. And one thing that was interesting is that, you know, years ago I interviewed Coretta Scott King, and the day before I interviewed Mrs. King, I spoke to my daughter who was in elementary school, and, you know, what did you do in school? Well, we learned about there was this place, and it was called the South, and they didn't treat the black people very fairly, so instead of, you know, taking the bus, they walked. And, you know, it's basically a second grader, very simple but accurate
mm-hmm.
view of, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott. And the next day, I said to I told this to Mrs. King when I interviewed her. I told her the story, and she said, well, that's why there's a holiday. So at least once a year, people will talk about what my husband did. And I think you can't talk enough about what her husband did.
It's an incredible, I've read many stories about his life. I went to the hotel where he was shot, and I will tell you, I started crying when I was standing in the hotel. They have, you know, his speeches playing, pictures of him, his clothes on the bed, and it's just overwhelming. You almost feel like maybe his spirit is there. And the hotel is so small. You know, on TV it looks like this huge place, but when you go there, if anybody has a chance, it's just amazing what Martin Luther King did for the movement. It's also amazing what Malcolm X did for the movement. I don't want to leave him out of the story because he was also another wonderful component. And there were many women involved in Rosa Parks in talking about the bus boycotts. She also was a wonderful component in the civil rights movement. But now you said you were a child. Now, what do you think the kids today, I mean, for me growing up, Public Enemy, Fight the Power, that was like one of the, you know, I would say my civil rights song. What do you think your kids' songs are today for, say, civil rights?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. I think that there's a different relationship now. I think it's less. I mean, look, one thing you have that's amazing is, you know, especially with Obama coming on, you've energized a generation. This hadn't, you know, existed before. You know, I have a son who went to 4 states to work for Obama. You know, my daughter traveled 3,000 miles to stand in the freezing cold at the inauguration. And, you know, and I think this is, you know, people are sort of charged by a new president represents, you know, a new kind of hope. I mean, there's a line from John Lewis, who features prominently in our film, who says that that Barack Obama is what you get at the end of The Bridge at Selma. So I think there's a direct connection when you think about, you know, the people being attacked on the bridge at Selma, you know, that there's, you know, a large number of people who don't really know about that bridge at Selma, but what they learn about, they're inspired by the story. And I think there's a direct connection between what happened at Selma and, you know, the Obama presidency.
Oh, and definitely. So I mean, I didn't think that Obama was going to make it. I mean, to be honest, I was just like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I mean, we can sit here and dream. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And then it happened, and I was like in shock. It was like surreal, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt, certainly in the neighborhood that I'm in. And, you know, but I think that there's, I think actually some of, you know, Obama's speeches, you know, borrow from some of the stuff in a good way, you know, I mean,
yeah.
In a good way, taking the inspiration from some of the stuff that Martin Luther King did. And if you look in, listen to some of Dr. King's speeches, I mean, they still inspire. One of the things that's great about doing a film of our length as opposed to a 5-minute piece on the news is you really get to hear Martin Luther King's speeches, and you get to hear when he gives the mountaintop speech. It's, I think, one of the great speeches of the 20th century. I mean, it's truly extraordinary.
Yes, you take a little more time with that. You take a little more time with that in the film so that people can see a little more information. And talking about the length of films, I mean, you talk a lot. You're also a teacher up at Stanford, and you talk about the use of the film as helping with social change, but somehow also that it's being manipulated with this real versus reality, that what we think is reality TV really isn't. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, I think, you know, reality TV can be entertaining, it can be fun to watch, but it's not particularly real. I mean, things are terribly manipulated. People have, you know, sound bites which they have, you know, said in different contexts or twisted around. So I think you shouldn't really look at reality TV as an example of the real. I mean, my personal belief is that what's real, it can be a lot more powerful than what's fiction, but when it's the real, so to speak. And I think that's what we tried to achieve, you know, in this film, where, you know, I also did a film on the rape of Nanking, where in 6 weeks, you know, the invading Japanese army went to China and killed, you know, several hundred thousand people and raped tens of thousands of women, but there was a small group of foreigners that stood up to them and saved hundreds of thousands of people. So I think, you know, I'm someone who's, you know, touched by common people standing up for the larger good. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Mississippi and Wycliffe Jean, and you know, it was a horrendous place, you know, but there are also people who, you know, true heroes who risked their life, who are ordinary citizens. I mean, look no further than John Lewis, who's now a leading congressman, but at the time he was a student organizer. And, you know, one thing you get from speaking to the people is how committed they were and how much they risked to be part of the civil rights movement.
Yeah,
you know,
well, I think the music helped them. That was kind of like a spiritual. The music, that's why I think it's a beautiful film that you made. It's so powerful, you know, that music can really feel like you're protected somehow by singing this song or chanting, you know, and clapping your hands, and you have all these people. One of the songs in there is The Circle Unbroken. On there. What's your favorite song on the movie?
You know, it's like asking what your favorite kid is. there's some songs that I really loved. Like one of the songs we did, you know, some of the songs we knew exactly where they're going to be in the film. And for example, we have the Roots in there saying, "Ain't no one going to turn us around." And, you know, they were just great. I mean, as you know, they're from Philadelphia and they came up I think they did an amazing job with the film. And they, when they were going to do the film, they called and they said they're bringing a tuba player. And I was like, wow, really? but the tuba player, you know, he's great. He's called Tuba Gooding Jr. and does a fantastic job. And, you know, they were truly, you know, extraordinary. And I think John Legend does a really good job of, you know, of expressing the song and the music, "Woke Up This Morning with My Mind on Freedom," which is what they sung at Martin Luther King's funeral.
Yeah.
But I still want to stress that in some ways, there's many, many dark times in the civil rights movement. But there was also, if you look at the overall, what happened, you had this horrendous system of segregation, which people thought was going to go on forever in the U.S., and people stood up and said, hey, you know, this is...
I'm going to stop this. Yeah, definitely. Let me interrupt you a minute for Bill. Bill, let me interrupt you for a second here. I think we have a caller. Good morning.
Hello?
Good morning. Yes, hi.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, who's this? Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Do you have a question? I think they kind of went off there.
Okay.
Let me try one more time. Good morning. Can you hear me now? Okay, well, we'll keep going. So, Bill, go ahead, finish your sentence. I'm sorry, you were saying.
I was just saying that it's a way that people change, you know, the face of a nation. And it was something that wasn't easy, but it was doable. But also, I hope that people see the film as something that's inspirational. I mean, we're trying to reach, you know, as many people as we can, of course. And the film will be on PBS probably early next year, and it'll be on DVD later this summer. And
you were nominated for an Oscar. You were also nominated with the Producers Guild.
Right. We're shortlisted for an Oscar, and then we were nominated for Producers Guild, Writers Guild Award. But one of the really gratifying things about the film is taking it around the world. And, you know, in Mexico, someone said it was a film that touched the Mexican soul, which I found very touching. You know,
wow.
I think the story is, look, the story is certainly bigger than me and all of us who worked on the film.
Right. Let me see if this is Anthony calling in. I'm sorry, but let me see if this is Anthony.
Okay.
Good morning. Is this Anthony? Hello? I guess they can't hear. Let me, okay. Well, hopefully he'll call back. I think that was Anthony trying to call in. But he did a beautiful sound, and he also has a new album out, The Point of It All. I hope everybody will check that out, anthonyhamilton.com. Also, let me mention soundtrackforrevolutionfilm.com. If you want to learn more about this, the next screen is coming up. You've been all over the world with this film. Let me ask you, when you were a little kid, did you think about making these, you know, documentaries? What did you think you were going to be when you grew up, Phil?
Well, yeah, it's funny. I went to a Quaker school in Philadelphia, and it was early on they were starting to use film, and some of my teachers were filming some of the protest marches of the 60s. So I think that I was always interested. I'm interested in film. I think the reality of the world is people would rather watch than read in some ways. And I think it's a very powerful medium. It's probably the most powerful medium, and it crosses all sorts of cultures.
Yes. Well, I tell you, I'm a movieholic. You know, hi, my name is Joy Keys, and I'm a movieholic. My friends know that I go to the movie the first weekend it opens. I can't tell you how many movies I have. Okay, I think this is Anthony again. Let me see. Good morning. Is this Anthony? Okay, he hung up again. But, Go ahead. What are you doing?
I just wanted to mention how amazing a job that Anthony did on the film. He has a truly extraordinary voice. And he sang with the Blind Boys of Alabama, and that's also something for our music supervisor Corey Smith, who sort of, you know, arranged for that. And I think it's sort of magic combination of a truly amazing song, and then two, you know, just fantastic groups. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, is very gratifying as a director, is you sit there and you try to put all these elements together, and then when you watch it all happen, It can be.
It's like your baby being born. Also, let's mention Dan Sturman on here, because you worked with Dan on some other films. How did you guys get to connect together and get this kind of brotherhood going on?
We worked together at ABC, and Dan's, you know, just a great filmmaker. And a film like this really requires a whole team. It's not just Dan and myself. We probably had, you know, well over 100 people worked on the film. I mean, film is the most collaborative medium there is. And we worked on it. And also, you know, speaking of Dan, you know, we should also mention the other Dan, with Dan E., who, Danny Glover, who was, a committed and dedicated of activists. And, you know, Danny was involved in this film right from the start. And he's someone who's really devoted his life to social causes. And I hope, you know, you see the film. And I think if you see the film, you'll feel, you know, the heart of Danny Glover in there as well, as someone who's, you know, looking to use the medium to try to make positive change.
Definitely. Let me see if this is a caller. Good morning. Do you have a question? Good morning. Do you have a question for the guest? Okay. People are calling in and dropping out and things like that. Let me mention again, soundtrackforrevolutionfilm.com. Also, if you want to learn more about Bill Guttentag and his new book, Boulevard, you can go to BillGuttentag.com. So now, why can't you just make a movie about a little old lady with flowers? Why are you deciding to make all these you know, intense films? Are you going to do something maybe about the BP oil spill, or something about Arizona?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, I keep thinking the next film I want to do is about the history of olive oil, you know, something that's not controversial and something that's that's good. Look, I think you look for powerful stories. And I think this is true not just for films, it's true in the writing that I do. I mean, I think powerful stories are what, you know, what inspires you. I mean, it was not, you know, I mean, going back to the civil rights movement, it was not an easy journey by any means. I mean, people went to jail, people were killed, you know, people lost their jobs, they suffered. And if you look, and they triumphed, and if you look at some of the footage in the film, what's amazing to me is the sort of horrendous things that basically, you know, the oppressors are using without any kind of shame. I mean, they just say the most vile, racist stuff, and it's like, okay, you know, this in the same voice.
Well, that's their truth. That's their truth. They think that's just the way it is, and, you know, you don't deserve to be, you know, standing, living, breathing, and, you know, we rule the world, you know what I mean? Unfortunately, that's the way it is not only here, but in many places around the world, in South Africa, in Latin America, you know, in Asia. I mean, people are fighting, you know, I guess the monsters, if you want to call them, all over the place.
Right, and I think it was pointed out in our film, and I certainly agree with it. Look, the U.S. is not a perfect nation. I don't think anyone would claim that. But it's a very different nation than it was when, you know, segregation was going on. And it's a changed nation, you know, due to the, you know, heroic activities of not just generals, but many, many foot soldiers. And also that's part of the thing I should mention, too, that we tried to do in the film, is to make it a combination of foot soldiers and generals. And some of the generals are people, you know, you're familiar with, like, you know, Andy Young and Julian Bond.
Harry Belafonte and stuff.
Harry Belafonte. And, but there's a lot of people you probably have never heard of whose stories are also extremely powerful. I mean, one thing that was kind of interesting is as you do interviews in a film, you know, you try to get people to, you know, feel what it was like at the time. And one person is probably featured in a film, the Reverend Billy Kyle, who was, you know, basically at many, many of the major civil rights things. I mean, from Emmett Till's funeral to being with Martin Luther King the day he was murdered. And at one point while we're doing the interview, he leaned over to me. Oh, we weren't even filming at that point, but he leaned over to me and said, you know, I can still feel the texture of Martin's tie that day.
Wow. Well, remember I told you I was standing in the hotel and it was just like, I felt like his spirit was, I mean, I just started crying. You know, it's just an amazing experience. We only have 2 minutes left. So don't forget, everybody who's listening, soundtrackforarevolutionfilm.com. Learn more about Bill Guttentag at billguttentag.com. Pick up his new book, Boulevard. Check out his other films, Man King, Twin Towers, Live. Oh, my God, Live, Russian Roulette. You got to come back because we don't have any more time to talk. But thank you so much, Bill, for calling in this morning. And thank you, listeners. I'm sorry. I think that Anthony was trying to call in. For some reason, couldn't get through. I'm not sure, but, you know, technology sometimes is not your friend. But thank you so much, Bill, for coming on this morning.
Hey, thank you, Joy. Really, really appreciate it. Take care then. Bye-bye.
No problem. Have a nice day. Bye-bye. Thank you to all the listeners who tuned in this morning at 11 a.m. Again, check out soundtrackforrevolutionfilm.com and check out upcoming screenings in your area. Please support the film. Again, the money that's made from the film is going for altruistic purposes. So it's not based on just making money and profit. Also check out Bill Guttentag's new book, Boulevard, and you can check him out at billguttentag.com. Stay tuned for 11:30. We're doing a show about mental health, youth and mental health, and where you can get help and resources, and we have three wonderful experts coming on at 11:30. And stay tuned. Next week I'm going to have actress Keisha Sharp and also singer Naneka coming on next week at 11:30. June 5th. Okay? Thank you so much for tuning in today.